From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Let's not ignore the threat gathering against us. Facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Power and dissent.
In Dublin, and I said to a guy who I knew was a known terrorist, I said, why did you become a terrorist? He said, well, it was really simple. He said, at 4 o'clock in the morning, an invading army burst into my house, tore my father out of his bed, put him in an internment camp, and sexually abused my mother and hit my brother with a rifle butt in the face. He said, at that moment, I was instantly politicized. If they really believe that more violence is going to bring peace, they do not understand history.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. President Bush warned last night the U.S. cannot wait for final proof in the form of a mushroom cloud before taking action against Saddam Hussein. In a televised address attempting to gain domestic support for a war against Iraq, Bush described President Saddam Hussein as a murderous tyrant and said he was not willing to stake one American life on trusting the Iraqi leader. The speech opened a week of debate in Congress over resolutions giving the president authority to wage war against Iraq, though he insisted its backing would not mean a military conflict was imminent or unavoidable. Bush said U.S. intelligence showed Iraq is building manned and unmanned aerial vehicles that could be used to target U.S. cities with chemical or biological weapons. Senator Ted Kennedy urged Bush to exercise the same restraint that his brother President Kennedy did in refraining from an attack on Cuba during the 1962 missile crisis. A first strike attack on Iraq is impossible to justify, Kennedy told the Senate. He said might does not make right. It is unilateralism run amok. The three major broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, all chose not to carry the president's speech live last night, despite much advance news coverage and the growing sense that the nation may soon be at war. The network said the White House did not formally ask the networks to broadcast the speech, as is the usual practice. Jerry Nachman, the MSNBC editor-in-chief, suggested NBC and the other networks were more concerned with making money from advertising. Nachman said, hey, war's big, but this is the money that broadcast networks are rolling out or reprising their primetime schedules. Washington Congressmember Jim McDermott said President Bush is threatening war as part of a plot to crown himself Emperor of America. At a rally in Seattle, McDermott said, this president is trying to bring himself all the power to become an emperor, to create Empire America. He also suggested that a bloodless silent coup could be underway. He added Bush is trying to submarine efforts to restart weapons inspections in Iraq to give him a pretext for starting a war to bolster U.S. oil interests. And as Bush talked about terrorism in Iraq, his administration quietly criticized Israel for attacking civilians. The Israeli Prime Minister, General Ariel Sharon, has vowed to press on with army operations in the Gaza Strip, despite international condemnation of a raid that killed 14 Palestinians on Monday. Most of the dead were victims of a single missile fired into a crowded dirt road. The missile gashed the median strip of Gamal Abdel Nasser Street and shattered windows 3 stories above it. Sharon hailed the operation as a success, although he expressed regret over civilian casualties. During Monday's raid, tanks backed by helicopters and bulldozers stormed the southern Gaza Strip town of Khan Yunis. Palestinian officials described the killings as a war crime and called for international protection. The United States, the European Union, Russia, Egypt, and UN Secretary General Kofi Annan all voiced strong criticism. In the last 3 weeks in the Gaza Strip, the Israeli army has killed over 40 Palestinians and injured another 160. Some 600 U.S. troops are scheduled to arrive next week for joint military exercises in the Philippines. The scheduled exercises will be held despite the death of a U.S. soldier in a bomb attack last week. The war games will involve 400 Filipino troops. And in Pakistan, for the second time in a week, the government has successfully carried out a test of a medium-range missile capable of carrying nuclear warheads. India accused Pakistan of testing the missile for political rather than military purposes. The test comes 2 days before Pakistan is due to hold parliamentary elections. In Malaysia, police have arrested an American sought by the U.S. on suspicion of belonging to an al-Qaeda-linked group. Ahmed Ibrahim Bilal, a student at the International Islamic University in Kuala Lumpur, is reported to have given himself up to the university authorities on Sunday. He's expected to be deported within days. The student is one of six men charged in U.S. courts with a range of terrorism-related offenses. These include conspiracy to wage war against the U.S., conspiracy to contribute services to al-Qaeda and the Taliban, conspiracy to provide material support and resources to al-Qaeda, and possessing firearms in furtherance of crimes of violence. Four men alleged to have conspired with him were arrested in the United States, in Michigan and Oregon last week. Meanwhile, charges that Attorney General John Ashcroft is overblowing charges and recent anti-terrorism arrests to push a doctrine of preventative justice. The test could come in the Lackawanna Buffalo case. South African police have foiled a plot to overthrow the South African government in order to reestablish an apartheid regime. According to the Guardian of London, the alleged plot was breathtaking in its ambition. A few thousand men were to seize radio and television stations, assassinate cabinet ministers, and expel hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of black people. According to court documents, the conspiracy was to spring apartheid-era killers from jail, blow up dams, destroy the state's computer network, and seize military bases. 12 men were arrested, charged with high treason and terrorism. The alleged plot came to light last month when a lorry packed with firearms and explosives was found abandoned at a filling station. Government officials said the plotters had no chance of succeeding, but that conspirators could have caused great harm. For the first time in nearly a quarter of a century, a U.S. president is on the verge of invoking the Taft-Hartley Act to settle a labor dispute. President Bush has officially taken the first step in a process that would allow him to force locked-out dock workers back to work. West Coast ports have been shut down since September 29th, when the Pacific Maritime Association closed 29 ports and locked out close to 20,000 longshore workers. On Monday, hours after negotiations broke down, Bush created a three-member board of inquiry that will file a report today on the economic impact caused by the lockout. The board must be formed before the administration seeks a federal court injunction to force striking or locked out workers back to their jobs for 80 days. An outgoing head of the Senate Banking Committee, Phil Graham, is coming under fire for accepting a potentially lucrative job with the Swiss-based investment UBS Warburg. Earlier this year, the firm acquired the energy trading operations of Texas-based Enron Corporation. Public Citizen described Graham's new job as payback for long backing the banking and oil industries, as well as Enron. Since 1989, Graham has been Congress's second largest recipient of campaign money from Enron. In addition, Graham's wife, Wendy Graham, once served on Enron's board of directors.
I said, "Hey there, stranger. Are you going? You're looking kind of tired, and your hunger is showing." He said, "I'm going to fight the war." I said, "Hey there, stranger, what are you really fighting for?" Singing, "Hey, freedom is what I'm fighting for. Ain't gonna let those Arabs get away with no more. I said it's our government that keeps getting and getting away with them.
Stranger by Scrubia W here on Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Last night, President Bush said he saw urgent duty to preempt an attack by Iraq. He gave an address in Cincinnati at the Cincinnati Museum Center. This is an excerpt of what he had to say.
11 years ago, as a condition for ending the Persian Gulf War, the Iraqi regime was required to destroy its weapons of mass destruction, to cease all development of such weapons, and to stop all support for terrorist groups. The Iraqi regime has violated all of those obligations. It possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons. It is seeking nuclear weapons. It has given shelter and support to terrorism and practices terror against its own people. The entire world has witnessed Iraq's 11-year history of defiance, deception, and bad faith. We must also never forget the most vivid events of recent history. On September the 11th, 2001, America felt its vulnerability, even to threats that gather on the other side of the earth. We resolved then, and we are resolved today, to confront every threat from any source that could bring sudden terror and suffering to America. Members of Congress of both political parties and members of the United Nations Security Council agree that Saddam Hussein is a threat to peace and must disarm. We agree that the Iraqi dictator must not be permitted to threaten America and the world with horrible poisons and diseases and gases and atomic weapons. Since we all agree on this goal, the issue is, how best can we achieve it? Many Americans have raised legitimate questions about the nature of the threat, about the urgency of action. Why be concerned now? About the link between Iraq developing weapons of terror and the wider war on terror. These are all issues we've discussed broadly and fully within my administration. And tonight, I want to share those discussions with you. First, some ask why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place. Iraq's weapons of mass destruction are controlled by a murderous tyrant who has already used chemical weapons to kill thousands of people. This same tyrant has tried to dominate the Middle East, has invaded and brutally occupied a small neighbor, has struck other nations without warning, and holds an unrelenting hostility toward the United States. By its past and present actions, by its technological capabilities, by the merciless nature of its regime, Iraq is unique. As a former chief weapons inspector of the UN has said, the fundamental problem with Iraq remains the nature of the regime itself. Saddam Hussein is a homicidal dictator who is addicted to weapons of mass destruction.
President Bush addressing a group 400 people at the Cincinnati Museum Center last night, laying out his case for why the U.S. should be able to unilaterally attack Iraq. Joining us on the line right now is Congressmember Dennis Kucinich, who is one of the congressmembers who is spearheading the move against an attack on Iraq. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's good to have you with us. Can you respond to what President Bush just said?
Well, the president makes a case for inspections. No case has been made under any circumstances under which the United States should launch a unilateral attack against Iraq.
Yet your fellow Congress members, Democrat as well as Republican, at this point look like they were overwhelmingly vote for giving Bush unilateral powers to attack Iraq.
Well, the resolution, which we're starting to debate on today, does give the president authority to act prior to and even without a UN resolution and authorize the president to use U.S. troops to enforce UN resolutions even if the UN doesn't request it. And what that does is violate Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, which reserves the ability to authorize force for that purpose to the Security Council alone. Members of Congress are just getting into this debate, and I'm hopeful that once the debate ensues and as the American people call Congress and indicate their concern, that the Congress will vote against authorizing the administration to launch a preemptive strike against Iraq.
Apparently, calls are coming in not just 10 to 1 and 20 to 1, but 100 and 500 and 1,000 to 1 to both Republicans as well as Democrats. Democracy Now! Did a poll of more than half the Senate offices and staffers from everyone from Senator Helms' office to Senator Smith as well, said overwhelmingly the calls were against a war. Yet we have everyone from here in New York, Senator Hillary Clinton, though she hasn't taken a public stance at this point, not being very clear that they would go along with their constituents.
Well, I think the American people do not want war, and you know that's one of the many reasons why I'm speaking out here. American people are looking for a higher expression of the meaning of our country, other than this joining in this drumbeat towards war. People want America to work with the world community on matters of global security. I think most Americans do not want America to go it alone. They want to see an America that takes what I would call an holistic view towards its role in the world, which is to work with other nations, to get rid of biological and chemical and nuclear weapons, to work with other nations to affirm the Kyoto Treaty, to do something about the landmines in the world and the small arms by signing treaties that help to eventually get rid of those. And you know, there is a role for America in the world, but it's not as an aggressor. It's not to establish a so-called Pax Americana. I'm very concerned about this drift towards war, which really is neither thoughtful nor merited by the evidence.
We're also joined on the telephone by Jay Bookman. Jay Bookman is the deputy editorial page editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Jay Bookman, you write a very interesting piece about how the official story on Iraq has never made sense, that the connection the Bush administration has tried to draw between Iraq and al-Qaeda has always seemed contrived and artificial. In fact, you say it's hard to believe smart people in Bush administration would start a major war based on such flimsy evidence, but the pieces just don't fit. Can you explain what you think is going on here? Jay Bookman, are you there?
Yes, I am. Could you hear me?
Not quite picking you up.
Amy?
Yes.
I'm going to put you on hold. I got Senator Kennedy calling. I'll be right with you.
Okay. Well, maybe you can let us know what he says. Okay. Put us on hold, and you'll come back. And let's see if we can get Jay Bookman on the line.
Hello, I can hear you fine.
Jay Bookman, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, Congressmember Dennis Kucinich will join us, and we'll be joined by Jay Bookman. Stay with us.
I was walking down the road stranger all along, singing, hey yo, hey yo. I said, hey there, stranger, where are you going? You're looking kind of tired.
You are listening to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Joining us on the line, Congressmember Kucinich is leading in the Congress those Congress members who are speaking out against war. We're also joined by Jay Bookman, who is the deputy editorial page editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Let me check if Congressmember Kucinich is back.
I'm back. Thank you.
Are you there, Congressmember Kucinich?
Yes, I am.
He just took a call and put us on hold from Senator Ted Kennedy, so he'll join us when he is back on.
Amy?
Jay Bookman, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Amy, I'm back.
Jay Bookman, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Doug?
I hear.
Tell them I'm on the line.
Hello, Amy, I'm back.
Hi. Okay, Congressmember Kucinich, what did Senator Kennedy have to say?
He and I talked about the importance of the American people calling today. In the next few days before the vote, and we also talked, we're going to be with each other this afternoon for a statement, and it's really an honor to work with him. He and Senator Byrd have really done a very important job in the Senate of establishing that this war that's being offered by the administration would be illegal under international law, and that the administration has not made the case. So I'm... I have to tell you, you know, as a member of Congress, as somebody who's been part of this institution, it really is a great source of concern that we would move on the path of war without any proof of Iraq's involvement with 9/11, with Al Qaeda. The writer who's on the line has made the case that the pieces do not fit, and they don't fit.
What about Bush's argument that we can't afford an attack, that is why the U.S. must attack preemptively?
Well, first of all, you know, we have to look at the case here to go over it. Iraq has not been connected with any credible evidence to 9/11. Iraq was not connected with any credible evidence to al-Qaeda's role in 9/11. Iraq was not connected to the attacks, the anthrax attacks on the country. Iraq, we don't know. The Central Intelligence Agency has not provided information that demonstrates whether or not Iraq has usable weapons of mass destruction, biological or chemical, or the ability to deliver such weapons if they have such weapons. And, you know, they don't have the ability to deliver any kind of technology. They don't have the missile technology to go, beyond Turkey, let's say. And so they can't strike the United States. This idea that we have to hit them preemptively before they hit us is based on a fiction. And it's important for the American people not to be drawn into fear. And that's where I think we have to look at this from a position of elevating this country above the fear. When Franklin Roosevelt faced a nation in 1941, which was attacked, he said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." America defended itself, but we didn't bomb Peru after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. We responded by meeting the challenge in the South Pacific. It is so important that America not be overwhelmed by fear. Fear is not our destiny. You know, the idea of our Star Spangled Banner, which I think needs to be mentioned at this moment, speaks of a land of the free and the home of the brave. There's a connection between bravery and freedom. And we can't let that go. We have to hold fast to that at this moment in our nation's history. We can't let America become a land which is intimidated by policies driving fear that cause people to make decisions against their own interest.
How do you respond to Bush saying that, and actually the CIA coming out with a report on the eve of the debate in the House and the Senate, that Saddam Hussein is developing nuclear weapons and so must be taken out?
Well, first of all, there has been no such information presented to the Congress that that Hussein has a nuclear weapon, or that he's close to having a nuclear weapon, or that he has the ability to deliver such a weapon if he had one. What that makes a case for is 8 years of inspections. It makes a case for bringing Iraq into the international community, so it's not isolated and doesn't think that it needs to have a bomb to have an effect on the international community. It also is an argument for disarmament worldwide. You know, there are 17 nations that are in the process that either have nuclear weapons or in the process of acquiring nuclear weapons technology. 20 nations biological weaponry, and 26 with chemical weaponry. They're either acquiring it or have it right now. You know, are we about to engage in an adventure around the world and seeking out new enemies and pursuing new threats? We have to stand on principle, and we have to, and the principle ought to be one of coherence and one of unity and a sense of interdependence, so that the world can exist as an interconnected whole, not to separate ourselves from the world, not to establish America as a unipolar force in the world. The world cannot stand that kind of a threatening principle.
Jay Bookman also joins us on the line from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. What do you think is really behind this charge for war, Jay Bookman?
I think there's clear evidence that this war was contemplated, or something much like it was contemplated, long before September 11th. If you look at statements by many of the most influential people in this administration, prior to their taking office, in fact, a kind of back-channel discussion has been going on for a decade about what the role of the United States should be internationally. Many of the top people in top positions in the Bush Defense and State Departments have been advocating a much more aggressive approach to foreign policy, to defense, prior to September 11th, prior to the 2000 election. They were clearly advocating regime change in Iraq, in Iran, in North Korea, countries that were, in the wake of September 11th, identified as the axis of evil by the president. But there's a clear train of clearly documented trail demonstrating that this is exactly what they had been pushing for long before September 11th. September 11th has become the excuse, the motivation. I think Congressman Kucinich was exactly right in saying the administration is trying to, instead of reassure America, trying to scare the hell out of America. Based on very little evidence whatsoever, Hussein does have probably biological and chemical weapons. He's had them for 20 years. There is no evidence, no indication that at any point in that 20-year history, he has tried to hand that material to terror groups. It just is a connection that does not exist, but they're trying to draw that connection in order to justify an approach toward an American empire that they had advocated for the past 10 years, long before September 11th.
So you're putting forth this issue, this idea, that the whole preemptive strategy is one to assert empire.
I think the net effect of it is empire. We are in a unique moment in world history. We are clearly the preeminent force militarily, economically, otherwise. We have two ways we can handle that situation. We can be a world leader, trying to build world consensus in favor of certain approaches, and including an effective approach against countries such as Iraq. Or we can go off and declare ourselves the leader, forcing everybody else to either be with us or against us, as the president has put it. And taking that responsibility, those obligations, that cost.
Jay Bookman, I know that the Congress member has to go, Dennis Kucinich, and I want to ask you about your colleagues in the press, but I just want to ask the Congress member on the issue of the press. What difference does it make that the mainstream press in this country is hardly covering the anti-war movement at all, here or abroad? You have 400,000 people protesting the Blair-Bush axis about Britain and U.S. Talking about the invasion of Iraq, and you don't have the New York Times or the Washington Post covering it. You have more than 20,000 people who rallied in New York this past weekend, and there's hardly a mention, or there is in the New York Times in the city section of the metro section. These stories are rarely covered. Does it help or hurt in Congress to know what's going on out there, and do you have other ways of assessing it?
You could be on an island without any communication at all, except someone sailing up and telling you that there might be a war under these circumstances, and people would know not to favor a war. I would say that each of us has to have confidence in our own consciousness here, and the fact that the media may not be providing coverage to those who oppose the war. It hasn't stopped this widespread concern expressed by the American people, whether they're sending emails or making phone calls or writing letters or appearing at rallies. It hasn't stopped that concern, and I think this concern is going to continue to grow, and it will move forward like a mighty tide in this country, whether it's covered or not. And sooner or later, it'll be irresistible so that the media cannot ignore it. And I think we have to have a sense of our own, of the power of our own agency here, that there is in this country a collective, unarticulated consciousness for peace, and as we call it for it, it becomes even more powerful, but, whether it's covered or not.
What inroads are you making in Congress? We more than 500 Congress members. What sense do you have of how many will vote against giving Bush unilateral powers to attack Iraq?
We are meeting with members today. I'll be leaving this for a meeting with members who are opposed to the war. I'd say the opposition's growing, and it's growing as the public calls Congress. I cannot stress strongly enough the importance of phone calls to the nation's capital, to members of the House and Senate right now, today, tomorrow, before the vote is taken, because people need to let their representatives know. And you know, there are members who are undecided. We need to let them know how we feel. And I think that war can still be averted. But if it isn't, this peace movement is growing, and it recognizes that the world is moving in that direction. And if America for a moment moves in an opposite direction, it's our responsibility to help set our country right. And so I have a great deal of confidence that peace is inevitable and that it needs our participation and our assurance. And we have to have, notwithstanding whether the media is covering the moment, what is important is that in our own intention, in our own hearts, that we keep alive this hope for peace and a willingness to work towards it, and a willingness to establish a framework for peace, which is what the United Nations really is about.
Congressmember Kucinich, joining us from Washington, D.C. And the number of the switchboard in Washington is 202-224-3121. You can call any congressmember or senator, 202-224-3121. Thousands of people have been calling their Congress members now for weeks. Still on the line with us, Jay Bookman of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And joining us from Cincinnati is Sister Alice Gerdeman. She's with the Intercommunity Justice and Peace Center. Last night, Bush spoke in the Cincinnati Museum Center. People in this country and around the world saw the speech. How many references did you see to the fact that thousands of people were protesting outside? Sister Alice Gerdeman, can you tell us what you and others were saying?
Well, the crowd outside had one message that I think we held in unison, and that is no to war, particularly this war, but many people felt strongly that war isn't the answer, period. We came at it from all different kinds of persuasions. We had people who were coming clearly from their religious perspective, but people who are calling for a stronger economy and saying that's what the nation should be concerned about and not trying to divert ourselves by looking at for a scapegoat in Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi people. We had persons concerned about human rights violations that are taking place because of the war on terrorism. We had young people, we had older people, we had, I would say, a mixture of the people of the Midwest out in front of the Museum Center.
And what was the scene like?
The scene was had a lot of energy. One man told me that he thought it had the most energy he had felt since the big red machine was going to the World Series. It was that kind of an electric kind of feeling.
And yet I saw you on none of the networks in New York. I wouldn't have known that there was a protest except through other means.
And that's a shame because clearly the paper this morning says that Bush's speech was well-received, local crowd receptive to message of possible war. That's the 700 or so people on the inside who were handpicked, invitation-only crowd. They received the message quite positively, as we expected. But the probably 4,000 of us who were outside, there were probably 120 people there who were for Bush, and the rest of us all quite simply said no to war.
And how many would you say were opposed?
I would say close to 4,000. The paper's saying over 2,000. I think we need to stress the over part of that estimate.
Jay Bookman, what about your colleagues? You're a deputy editorial page editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. What about this almost complete whiteout in the U.S. press, on the networks and in the national papers of protest?
I can't speak for other areas. I know that there are protests occurring here in the Atlanta area on a weekly basis. They are still relatively small. Newspapers tend not to cover protests. Protests are great visuals often for television, but there's usually not much news there as far as the newspaper perceives it.
Well, could you explain that? It's a philosophy I don't understand. When Bush repeats something that he has said for months, it is news all over this country. When protesters go out in the streets because no one is handing them a microphone or inviting them into the network studios, that's considered no news.
The president is the president. He has the power to do things that those protesters do not. So what he says and what he does are inevitably news. I don't think there's a way to change that.
What you just said, that point where you said he has the power to do something the protesters don't, well, hasn't it been the case that in any major move in at any time, in any place, that it has been people gathering together that ultimately have the power?
Certainly, but what I'm saying is that there reaches a I think the anti-war sentiment in this country, and judging from my emails, it does certainly exist. I've gotten probably 4 out of every 5 emails I've gotten in response to the pieces I've written have been supportive of the position we're taking, which is that this war is not necessary. So I think it's definitely out there. But what you are getting, because of the effect of September 11th, people are uncertain about that sentiment that they're feeling. They're uncertain about how to express it. And I think the administration is taking great advantage of that uncertainty.
But isn't the press helping by only expressing or almost only expressing the views of the administration and those who are talking war and those who are articulating very strong stances against, amongst them, the leaders being those who lost loved ones at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, people like Amber Amundsen, people like Rita Lazar, Colleen Kelly, who are saying no to terror, no to war.
If this message was being... I think Congressman Kucinich and Senator Kennedy are to be lauded for the leadership that they're showing. But in any system, such as including our own democratic system, leaders will get the attention. Our leaders, especially those in the Democratic Party who shares, in many cases share this sentiment of unease, are unwilling to show the leadership and the courage it takes to say so. I think the reason we're not seeing a more forceful debate on this issue is not the media's failure to cover people who are outside the hallways of power, so to speak. It is the failure of those who do have the power, who have been elected to positions of leadership in this country, who are failing to exercise it. If those people were making the arguments they ought to be making, the arguments that they, many of them, know ought to be made, the press would be reacting in a different way. I think the failure is in our leadership in this country, and that what you're seeing in the media is a reflection of that, not the cause of that.
Well, Jay Bookman, I want to thank you for being with us. Last words, Sister Alice Gerdeman in Cincinnati.
Well, I just said, I think that if we have a democracy, and some of the people out there last night were beginning to doubt whether or not it really is a true democracy, but if we have a democracy, our leaders also need to hear from us. We don't just need to hear from them. And what at least the paper is reporting that Bush said last night is not something I needed to hear. As you said earlier, it was just a repeat of the cliches he has used before. What was missing in last night's event were was the voice of the people who are saying, we want truth, and we want to be heard, and we don't want this war.
Sister Alice Gerdeman, Jay Bookman of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, I want to thank you both for being with us. When we come back, among others, Gabriel Byrne, the actor, speaks out against war. You're listening to Democracy Now!
Stalin, not alone. Bush, Rumsfeld, and Sharon. In the kingdom of paranoia, they'll annoy ya. They're the brave hearts. Want absolute power, don't ya? Don't ya wanna end free speech? Enron, oil, lies, death. You live with yourself. How is that? In the school of the Americas, they learn the secret trade of killing for democracy, for hate. Controlling fate, possible attack, anticipate, retaliate, eradicate. The other guys, they're never right, not even when they're just fighting back. Hate,
you
make
it in your mark. You are listening to Democracy Now! That's King of Hearts, Jamaica Plain, here on the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we reported this weekend, more than 20,000 people gathered in Central Park to speak out against war. Among them was actor, producer, author Gabriel Byrne.
Thank you. I've never spoken in a situation like this before, and I didn't really expect to, but when I passed by and I saw these people, I felt that I had to say what I had to say. I have some questions of my own which I don't think are answered. Why is so much money being spent on military hardware when people in this country are starving and homeless? Why are people working their asses off all their lives and get to be 60 years of age and find they've no pensions because corporate criminals have stolen them? Why is it that the government is involved in supporting that kind of a system? Why is the press not speaking out and telling us what's going on? What happened on September 11th was a tragedy of worldwide proportion. One of the greatest tragedies of this or any other century, in my opinion. But, and this may seem like a harsh thing to say, had we been less involved with Bill Clinton getting a blowjob from Monica Lewinsky and O.J. Simpson and all the other distractions that were used to keep our minds off what was happening around the rest of the world, we might have been better prepared. I'm tired of turning on the television and finding experts saying, well, here's the thing that's happened over there now, and just to tell you that that's true, here's an expert who'll tell you the same thing. Yes, that's going on over there. You're right there. George Orwell and Aldous Huxley, George Orwell in 1946 and Aldous Huxley in 1932 predicted a time when black propaganda would rule, when propaganda that was black and untrue would pass for the truth, when war would be confused with peace, and peace would be confused with war. American democracy, which is a shining light in the world, is being hijacked by a junta who, let's face it, what are they going to Iraq for? For what? Oil. Now, the thing about it is this, that the people of Iraq are children, women, old people, and they are all universally vilified by one man, Saddam Hussein. And every time the word Iraq comes up, that's the name that you hear. And that's the criminal du jour we're after. What happened to Osama bin Laden? Did he lose his co-starring role? Manuel Noriega, what happened to him? In Panama City, 3,000 people were killed in a bombing raid, so-called to get Manuel Noriega, and it was to get the Panama Canal rights back, not to get Manuel Noriega. Another lie that was told to people. And it, so that people cannot think in a complex political way, another weapon of mass distraction is the media, who reduces everything to a soap opera. It's a weapon of mass distraction. So let's say, let's take that money that we're putting in developing how effective cluster nuclear bombs can be, and give it to our poor, and give it to our young people. And I'm way over, and I have one last thing to say, and it's this. A very small percentage allowed this man to rob the election. This guy isn't even an elected member of all this country. Why is this guy speaking for us? A man who lied his way into power. And he's sending us into war. Okay, one last thing. I sat down once in a place in Dublin, and I said to a guy who I knew was a known terrorist, I said, why did you become a terrorist? He said, well, it was really simple. He said, at 4 o'clock in the morning, an invading army burst into my house, tore my father out of his bed, put him in an internment camp, and sexually abused my mother, and hit my brother with a rifle butt in the face. He said, at that moment, I was instantly politicized. If they really believe that more violence is going to bring peace, they do not understand history. Yeah. 30 years ago, 6 million people died in Vietnam. Nicaragua had been reduced to rubble. Honduras, El Salvador, Somalia, Grenada. These are all places that have been attacked for what? The signs are all around there, you know what to say, and I have to say this. If each person goes out of here and tells one other person that they have to question and they have to ask why and they have to stop accepting what they're being told on a daily basis from the so-called organs of truth, if this crowd doubles and if this crowd trebles, and if people start to realize that if they take the vote and use it, you can vote this junta out of power.
And that was actor Gabriel Byrne speaking from the stage at Central Park, where 20,000 people gathered. And by the way, if you'd like to get a copy of today's program, you can call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. As we turn now to Colleen Kelly, who lost her brother Bill in the attack on the World Trade Center and started the organization Peaceful Tomorrows. This is Colleen Kelly.
My name is Colleen Kelly, and I'm here today representing the September 11th families for Peaceful Tomorrows. I feel classified these days in the following hierarchy. Sister of Bill Kelly Jr., murdered on September 11, 2001. Mother of three small children. American citizen. Girl from a small town living in the Bronx. I read about what the average American reads. I certainly don't have access to classified intelligence. My only area of expertise lies in being Bill's sister and losing someone I loved very much. Bill died because 19 men had weapons of mass destruction, box cutters. I am becoming consumed with the thought that our country may soon be at war, waged partially in my brother's name and the names of thousands killed last year in the terror attacks. Bill died a victim of a hateful, single-minded ideology. And it is worrisome that our country's single-mindedness could initiate more heartache around the world. My point is this. I will never feel safe for me or my family if my country becomes a unilateral, preemptive, single-minded nation ruled by a powerful minority. When my organization visited over 70 congressional offices last week, not one could report a majority of calls in favor of war. Where then are the 80% of Americans that are behind this, and what questions are the pollsters asking? Let our representatives quite simply represent. I fear my Congress is more concerned with November chads than historical precedent. Where is the national debate? This could be the biggest vote of their careers and my lifetime. The American public deserves to hear the pro and cons without the third grade name calling, unpatriotic, softy, and so on. Our narrow focus on military intervention in Iraq will only lose us international credibility. Our big stick could turn into a big boomerang. I'm not naive. I know the cost could be horrible if the supposed evil intentions of Saddam's become manifest. But what of a cost of a preemptive strike? 3 weeks and out? I doubt it. Loss of American military persons, thousands of Iraqi civilian deaths, missile exchanges with neighbors, including Israel, World War III. It's time for all of us to think outside the box. Only Pandora knows what's in there. My brother didn't die from a nuclear weapon. He didn't die from chemical or biological warfare. He died from single-mindedness, the inability to see a situation in a variety of ways. And until we address that weapon of mass destruction, no armed military in the world can keep us safe. I say to you today, not in my name, not in the name of Colleen Kelly. Thank you.
Colleen Kelly lost her brother William Kelly in the attack on the World Trade Center and was one of those who began Families for Peaceful Tomorrows at peacefultomorrows.org. As we turn now to actress Susan Sarandon.
I am so very happy to be here. I have been feeling so isolated, so lonely, so convinced by the mainstream media that I'm out of my mind to be worried about this path that we are taking towards this war. I have been taken out of context in every newspaper that has bothered to print anything. We have been threatened. And all along, you know, Bush from the very beginning said, you know, you are either with us or against us. I don't know who the us is, but I say to Mr. Bush, this is what democracy looks like. This is what an intelligent citizenship does. We question. We demand to know answers. We will not give our daughters and sons to a war for oil. Look around you and see how many people are here today, because I guarantee you it will not be represented this way when you read about it in the morning. We here can imagine what war will do to human beings whose faces we will never see, whose names we will never know, whose numbers we will never know, all killed preemptively in our name. If preemption is now justified as defensive, if a war against a potential threat is defensive, then so was Pearl Harbor. We must invest in alternative technologies. This is a crime against the peace according to international law. And after this war, there will be no longer any international law, only the rule of the stronger. And do we, the people, really want to be a new Rome that imposes its rule by the use of overwhelming force whenever its interests are threatened, even perceived potential threats? We do not want endless warfare. So I ask all of you, anybody out there that has a pencil and a paper, I'm going to give you some numbers. There are people still functioning in the government who are asking questions, and we must support them. At the top of the list is Robert Byrd from West Virginia. We have to get out there and support him in his filibuster. The number of the Capitol Hill switchboard is 800-236-5495. Call. Ask.
That was Susan Sarandon and the 800 number she gave for the Capitol switchboard, which goes through another group, and you can go straight through is 800-236-5495 or 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. And that does it for the program. Our website is www.democracynow.org. You can email us at mail@democracynow.org. Our producers are Mike Byrne and Angie Caron, Chris Abrams and Anna Noguera. Thanks to Angela Alston, Uri Garland, and Emily Kunstler. Also, Mike DeFilippo, our engineer and music maestro. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening. But the silence